Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I'm your host, J.O. Covan. It is 8:05 a.m. Monday, December 12th in the year of our Lord, 2022. A real rise and grind day, guys. I got my usual 5 hours of sleep with two interruptions. Cookie now insists on sleeping on the bed, and she's become a tyrant. It started when she was scared of thunderstorms, but I think ever since the pandemic, whatever her survival instincts were from being left alone during the day, they've atrophied horribly ever since 2020, because she's more scared, more nervous, and it started during a thunderstorm. I had taken pictures where she was trying to like dig under my pillow, and I was like, well, it's hard to sleep when your dog is trying to bury herself under the pillow that you're trying to rest on. But now every night she just comes into the room and walks to my side of the bed and looks at me. Then she walks to the front of the bed and tries to peer over. Then she shimmies over to the righteous girlfriend's side of the bed, looks at her. And eventually either waits for us to give permission, or when the lights go off, I guess she thinks she's a fucking ninja. And she's like, oh, they'll never suspect anything. Thump! And there she is on the bed trying to find a spot to sleep on. I think it's my general insomnia. I think whatever is affecting my head, I have these horrible neck and head pains that are concerning me. The doctor is doing a blood test. And I think I would... barring something horrible, of course, I would rather know what I have than have it be like, so far inconclusive, not sure what's ailing you. Because I feel like that would be my luck. Like, I would have some sort of unique disease or ailment. And it's like, see, I told everybody I had it. But yeah, sleep is horrible. So right now, I'm not even, this is pre-walnuts green tea. JL. This is post black coffee, eggs, blueberries, JL. As I always like to say, I front load all my good eating during the first half of the day, so I feel good and positive and like there's hope. And then just that first taste of Talenti, or that first cookie, or that first chip, and all of a sudden it's a cinematic movie montage bender where I'm just drowning in Talenti and chips and rubbing my gut and going, comedy sucks. So you're getting me at the, this is rise and grind, JL. This isn't grind and die, JL, which is what we call the second half of the day. But mystery headaches and neck aches, never a good thing. So I'll keep you posted on that. I've already suggested that if my special half blackface were to miraculously sell to a platform, I'm sure I would get horrific medical news later that day. and if of course it doesn't sell, they'll be like, your clean bill of health, it was just a neck strain and lack of sleep, and you're totally fine and healthy, and you're going to live a nice long 7 more years. Oh, a lot of shows, guys. A lot of shows coming up, because I've just been hustling and begging and pleading with various venues, and some of them are coming through. Most are not, but some are. Obviously, this Saturday, for any of my... Once again, I have no idea where any of you people live. If any of you listen to this or just download it and go, maybe this will stop JL from wanting to slit his wrists. Which I don't, guys. That was another suicide joke. A lot of those recently. Is this a cry for help? No. I think JL's too spiteful to kill himself. He would want to be here for his own failure just to say, I was right. Mamaroneck, the Emeline Theater, this Saturday. So that should be fun. Kind of co-headlining, I guess, with Al Lubell. Very funny comic. So if any of you are in the, we got successful, we wanted better school districts, we have a house, we're rich, friends that left, New York City for a place in the burbs north of the city, please come to the show. It'll be a real good one. So that's, I think, 7 o'clock, if I'm not mistaken. It's on my website, but 7 o'clock in Mamaroneck, New York. So that's this Saturday. Excuse me, for all my Long Island fans, which they do exist. I will be at oh, Cookie's trying to come in. She doesn't realize the studio door is locked, so she's just gonna bump her head and get a concussion. Because she thinks she can just nudge in to the room and then she's gonna be like, "What the fuck?" Anyway, January 6th and 7th in Long Island at the Brokerage in Belmore. So come out to those, get your tickets Friday, Saturday. After that, Pittsburgh, PA at the Pittsburgh Improv, January 19th. I was trying to book some shows around that so that I didn't have to like take multiple days off from work for a one night gig, but that doesn't seem to be working out. Holding in my frustration. One comedy complaint, and then I'll get back to the schedule and the itinerary for the episode. The sad thing about my career, part 983, is that I thought I would be elevated to a different level after 2020 and 2021. But what I really am at is like I'm at the top of the heap of the comics that the industry doesn't give a shit about. So you end up being like looking like a like it like if you're it doesn't matter if you're ranked first in your high school class of comedians that the industry doesn't give a shit about high school. You all fail to go to college. Like, so the guy who finishes last in that comedy world is just like, yeah, well, I get it, man. We are being screwed by the industry. Yeah, we are. I'm like, look at my extracurricular activities, bro. Viral, national press coverage, billions, tons of albums, great content, a special that's been murdered. My special is like the equivalent of like that. Like, I survived a school shooting at industry doesn't care about you, high school. But then you get a lot of people who are just like, yeah, no, industry is definitely screwing me over too. I did three open mics last month and nobody's hollering at me. And you're like, yeah, we're the same. We're the same. Because in this industry, nobody respects anything except, I don't want to say credits. I mean like current credits, like currency. Like, what are you doing right now? Who are you? Are you hot right now? Are people talking about you? Do you have a big thing out? That's all people really care about. So that's just sort of a frustrating thing because I'm trying to get booked at some clubs where it's like, for real? Like, I can't get a, there are certain clubs where I go, oh, well, yeah, no, I didn't sell great the last time. I get it. But, that would be my Utah. It's not even a complaint. It's like, I wish I had sold better tickets because I'd love to be out regularly in Salt Lake, the greater Salt Lake City area for my love of the jazz. And I have some really good fans out there. But I didn't sell tickets. So I have no idea if I'll ever get booked there without a new spark to my career, also known as a fucking agent. Because I don't even know if I sold my special tomorrow to HBO. I still don't know if most of these clubs would like, it's like, hey guys, here's an article from me from the New York Times calling me the greatest new comedian of the year. My social media following is now in the millions, and my special's on HBO. I bet you like half my emails would still go to spam or just be ignored. Like, we only talk to agents. Like, this guy doesn't have an agent. Pass. And meanwhile, if you're like living in a shoebox with 8 minutes of material, but you have an agent who's like, you didn't see Homeless Jim's TikTok? It got over 3 million impressions. Oh wow, can he headline tonight? Special event pricing? We'll book a second show for him? Great. So there, I don't even know where I'm going with that gripe, but the point being, some of these venues, I'm just like, okay. Like, why aren't I getting booked again? And I'm not gonna say anything about anybody, but it's just one of those things where you're like, wow, you just realize being the top of the pile, being ranked, being the valedictorian of comedians the industry doesn't care about is like the exact same thing as being last in your class at of the comedians the industry doesn't care about high school. That's the frustrating thing. Like, it's a lot of effort to be where I'm at, and it pays almost no extra dividends as being a total failure. There, that I think that sums it up. That's the fr if I could come up with one of all my frustrations, I think that's the most frustrating thing. It takes, what did Dolly Parton say? It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of money to look this cheap. Like that's my comedy career. It takes a lot of effort to fail this hard. So there, that is the essence, guys. That's the O de J.L. as far as my comedy career goes. So shows, now that you're pumped up to see me perform, Pittsburgh Improv, January 19th, Chicago City Winery, February 7th, co-headlining with Kevin McCaffrey, very funny guy. That is going to be a great, great show at a really nice venue. Unfortunately, when I promote it, like, most people don't see it. Like, I've had literally people ask me, like, when are you going? Like, City Winery is a great venue in Chicago. And I had a lot of people who didn't want to make the trip up to Schaumburg, which is where the Chicago Improv is. Like, people were like, oh, it's not downtown Chicago. My favorite interaction when I was in Chicago was the fan who was DMing me on, what's it called? The fan that was DMing me on Instagram. And was like, oh, you got to go, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, have a good trip. And I'm like, wow, I can't even get the Chicago people to see me in Chicago, but glad you criticized my breakfast choice. You should really go here. I'm like, I'm in Schaumburg. I'm not taking a cab to downtown Chicago for your favorite brunch spot, lady. Are you coming to the show? Then leave me the fuck alone. With respect, thanks for being a fan. Love you. Hugs and kisses. XOXO. Chicago Winery, February 7th. I'm trying to schedule DC gigs right before then. Don't know if that will happen. Once again, I'm trying not to do like one night shows only that force me to take off multiple days from work. I want to sort of piggyback shows before then so that like part of my travel is just like eaten up by multiple gigs, but who knows? Odds are it won't work out. And then March 3rd, back in Boston, City Winery. Yay. And then March 31st and April 1st, new hour, same JL. Yeah, Triad Theater, New York City. Let's run this one back. Just to put this in perspective, we're under 4 months from when I tape my next hour. And that next hour will be 16 months since I recorded the first set of Half Blackface. Let's just say I hope that Half Blackface is out by then. And I will not bore you with any other concerns or gripes about Half Blackface, but let's just hope that I'm not recording my eighth hour while my seventh hour has not yet been released. Because I don't want the first 10 minutes of my set to be inside baseball of me threatening bodily harm to various people in the comedy world. I don't think that would be a good way to start out the Hateful Eighth. But I'm excited for that. So you know, ticket link will be available, you know, sometime this month, I believe. Chicago, there will be a ticket link next week, I think. I think they're going to announce it next week via their website. So that's exciting. So hitting up some of the big cities. And as always, thank you for letting me know on social media that you don't live in those cities and that you want me to come to your city. I had to tell a guy I checked myself before I wrecked myself on social media when somebody said, what about San Francisco? And I was just like, well, the clubs in San Francisco have not replied to my emails in a decade, regardless of my station in comedy. Hey, I'm a big deal on Adam Carolla. No reply. Mailer Damon. I'm on the Dan Le Batard show. It's a big show. Maybe we can promote nothing. Hey, I am doing really well. It's 2020, and even though everybody is suffering, my career is taking off, and I have a lot of fans, and people want me to tour. Can you book me? No reply. So, once again, better to be dog shit with an agent than gold and unrepresented. There it is. Put that on my fucking tombstone. So no ticket link yet for Chicago or the New York special taping, but those will be up sometime this month. You, if you're listening to this, I guess you don't need to be signed up to my newsletter, but the newsletter is obviously the you know, a good tool to make sure you don't miss those big announcements. Also, if anybody wants a cameo, tis the season. I'm crushing it right now, finally. December is always a good month. Order your cameo for your boss, for your friend, for your loved one, for your kid, for your parent. Your grandmother probably loves my videos. So, you know, whatever the case may be, get those orders in soon before Hanukkah, Christmas, and Kwanzaa. And, oh yeah, by the way, I have a Patreon. I don't know if I've ever mentioned that on this show, but patreon.com/JLCAUVIN. The book review of the Jim Thorpe biography goes up this week, and I know people liked hearing me review books on this podcast, and I appreciate that. That was part of like what inspired me to make like a more, you know, a more humorous and specialized book review show as part of the Patreon. But this review of the Jim Thorpe biography is, it's a good one. It's, and what's funny is the Righteous Girlfriend said she actually liked the review of the George Floyd book. There was a couple of jokes in that one, but that was just more serious. She found it more interesting how I wove together three different random books into telling a very compelling national story. So I didn't expect that, but she doesn't like laughing at me, but I guess she still finds me interesting and thoughtful sometimes. But the Jim Thorpe Path Lit by Lightning review, which is, I think, probably about 26 minutes, is, probably after Mitch McConnell cooking, the Mitch McConnell cooking show. The Jim Thorpe book review might be my favorite piece of, get ready for it, Patreon. So, yeah, I don't know. This is just, I guess, a reminder for people who are Patreon subscribers to check that out. I'm sure the rest of you are, you have decided to pass, and that's your right as American citizens or as citizens of the world, because you're in good company, because approximately 8 billion people in the world choose not to purchase my content or come to see my shows. So it's, you're in good company and bad company, but good company as well. So, that's it. That's the sad, pathetic pitch for that. And the live, if you're listening to this and you are a Patreon, the live JL hangout will be, December 23rd, 8 PM. Maybe we make it nine. I felt like I had a good turnout for the election. Maybe we'll make it 9 p.m. Let's say 9 p.m. December 23rd, 9 p.m. JL Patreon hangout. And then if you are a Making Podcasts Great Again fan and Patreon person, the Eppies will be December 29th. Those are always the most fun shows. That's where, for those of you that don't listen to Making Podcasts Great Again, that's the annual show where we hand out the Epstein Awards, also known as the Eppies, honoring the best in the year of Making Podcasts Great Again. So, that's that. That's all the housekeeping. What a fun way to start a podcast with a to-do list that nobody ever does. two things to talk about, and then I'm going to go read today's newspapers, go work out, and pray. Just pray for things, and we'll see what happens. But I watched Sebastian Maniscalco's new special on Netflix. I am a Maniscalco fan. Ever since I got to work with him, I emceed for him in 2013 at the DC Improv. And as I've said before on this show, the three biggest kills I've ever seen, DC Improv is just a great club because they all took place at the DC Improv. But Patrice O'Neill, when I emceed for him in 2010... when he was preparing for Elephant in the Room, his special. Gary Owen, who I've worked with a few times and saw a few times, absolute murderer. And Sebastian Maniscalco in 2013, when I worked with him at the DC Improv. And been a fan ever since. But once he hit sort of his peak, I saw him at the Garden right before the pandemic. I guess, did we go... was that like 2018 maybe? Because I think I was still living in the city. So it could have been like early 2019 or late 2018 because it was winter. But I saw him at the Garden and it was a great show. But I've seen, you know, some of his specials, I felt like he was doing a thing that sort of Dane Cook did at one point, which is like, this is regardless of whether you like Dane Cook or not. Dane Cook at one point, it was a subtle difference that most people don't get because most people are fucking stupid. But he went subtly from like, I'm Dane Cook doing my comedy to I'm Dane Cook doing Dane Cook comedy. Like when you're very conscious and it's not organic, but it's like people like it when I do this and then I make hand gestures and then I'm just saying everybody, like I think I've said this maybe on this podcast, but I've definitely done it on stage where I say, Dane Cook's gift was convincing people of things that never happened. You know, like, have you ever, you know, that guy at the office, first of all, Dane Cook, you've never worked in an office. You've been a comic since you were like 19. You know, that guy in the office who walks around and shits in the urinal. Everyone hates the guy who shits in the urinal. It's like, oh God, that's Bob. He shits in the urinal. And his audience is like, oh my God, yes, Bob sucks. He does shit in the urinal. And I'm just like, nobody does that. Why? What? Nobody does that. That's not a thing. That's not a thing in comedy. That's not a thing in real life. That's, nobody knows that person. Why are 17,000 people screaming and howling with laughter? And he just started to feel like he was doing Dane Cook material. Like he was like almost stepping out. Like he was like Dane Cook in the writer's room for Dane Cook. Like I'm trying to write for Dane Cook, where it's like, well, you are Dane Cook. Just write what comes naturally, perform what you've been doing. Don't be like consciously trying to come up with the next thing that is your brand, so to speak. And I felt like on the last two Maniscalco specials I saw, it felt like he was writing Maniscalco material. Like he was like, I'm Sebastian Maniscalco and I need to keep delivering to the people Sebastian Maniscalco brand material. And, you know, I'm a fan, of course, and I was just like, has he peaked? Has he peaked? You know, which is fine. People peak. Look at 2020 for me. I peaked. You know, couldn't perform anywhere. Maybe that explains it. As long as people couldn't see me or meet me or interact with me, they were like, I love this guy. As soon as I tried to meet the people, they were like, fuck you. I'm staying home. Anyway, sorry, I promise no more gripes. That was a gripe. Maniscalco, I watched this new special. Don't even remember the name of it. But it started out a little slow, but I kind of liked it. I feel like he's, I think, 49. He looks a little older in this one, but I got to say, for me, I felt like I looked 10 years younger right before the pandemic. I feel like the insomnia that really hasn't stopped since summer of 2020 has really aged me, because the eyes, I always had the sort of sleepy eyes, or as old ladies would call them, bedroom eyes, but I had sleepy eyes, but now they're like sleepy to the point of like, you look unhealthy and old versus like, hey, you look seductive, tired man. Now it's like, you need a rest. Like, what's wrong with you? But he looked a little more tired. I was like, well, maybe that's the pandemic. He's been trapped. I mean, he's obviously fucking like a mega star of comedy. Like he's as far as stand-up goes, he's at that. I know people will be like, no, he is. In terms of revenue, he's at that Chappelle, Kevin Hart, Seinfeld level of like, you know, I think last year I saw something that said he made $40 million last year. That's pretty fucking insane. And that's without like, that's without movies and a TV show level. There's no royalties from like a TV show or no Jumanji under his belt making him like 20 million. That's a 40 million stand-up comedy year. That's insane. So between that and having two young kids now, he's got, I think he said a 5-year-old and a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. So that's obviously going to be very busy no matter how much money you have. If you're involved and you're touring, you know, it doesn't matter if you're flying private and getting to walk up to the jet and take a nap, you're still traveling all over the country, all over the world. And meanwhile, trying to be a dad with two young kids. So, which require obviously a certain amount of energy. So I thought to myself, well, that would explain all those factors. Plus, you know, going from like 43 to 49 is a significant shift in life. It's like, it's not the same as going from like 26 to 32, really. It's you start to just turn to shit, if I can say so myself. So it started a little slow. I was like, okay. But I kind of liked it. I kind of liked that his lower energy was maybe like sapping him of a little of the absurdism that he'd been leaning into. Not that I mind it, but it was like for him, like a physical gesture was like, he was like the cool, calm guy who's just like, you know, I don't like to do that because, and then like he'd do like one big physical act out and it would heighten it because it was like he was such a cool, calm, cynical character. But he'd start to lean into like more physical stuff. I've always said, you know, he combines, like when I saw him at the Garden, he was wearing like, you know, expensive Nike, like classic Nike sneakers and like a leather jacket and like some tight pants. And I was just like, that's what's so funny. And that's part of my joke about Italians where I go, nobody has more rough shit to say about black people. And yet nobody, no group of white people seems to embody so much of the same things that black culture embodies than Italians. Showy dress, great pride in their self-identity. You know, like it's a funny thing. It's like a Spider-Man meme almost where that, you know, where Italians would be pointing at black people. And it's like, oh wait, you are doing kind of the same thing, but within your own group. Like they'll be the ones, why is everything gotta be about race? But come see me and have a meatball of a time at Italian comedy night. But why do the blacks always got to say everything's black? But come see me and mamma mia, what a night of pasta and gravy at New Jersey Performing Arts Center with Tommy... with Tommy Two Sheets and his buddy Joey Nichols. They're going to give you a night of Pavarotti... Godfather, sauce, gravy, and cannoli. Mamma mia comedy. But why do the blacks? Everything's always got to be race. Everything's always got to be black pride. What about, what? And when they try to take away Columbus Day, what the hell, by the way, what the hell is Kwanzaa? Why do they need Kwanzaa? Just celebrate Christmas. But if they take away Columbus Day, I'm going to be so mad. Italians need their day too. We need our day. Okay? Why did I go off on that tangent? Anyway, the point is, Maniscalco kind of embodied that cool, calm Italian persona, but clearly, either intentionally or unintentionally, was incorporating some of the more showy performance notes of like sort of stereotypical black comics, some act outs, some big stage kind of performance type shit. And he was starting to lean into that too much. I felt like he was just giving the people like, this is what they like, you know, like just give them more Maniscalco type stuff. Maniscalco, this one I kind of liked from the beginning because it was like a little more subdued. He was a little more toned down. And then the reason I'm telling you about this, I enjoyed it for sure. I enjoyed the special. So that's he was doing it in a tux. I don't know if that was the right choice, but I enjoyed the special, so I'm giving it a thumbs up. But I learned something about me, which I thought was interesting, because I'm watching the special, and he's doing a bit, which was like not one of my favorite bits on the thing, not for any political reasons, but he's doing a bit about a kid in my son's class identifies as a lion. He comes dressed in like fur with a tail. And I said to one parent, I said, look at this kid, he's identifying as a lion. And this parent said, yeah, isn't that great? And I just walked away. I said, we're not going to be friends, I can't talk to you. And everybody laughed, but he kept leaning into the lion thing to the point where I was like, okay, I think now it's like not even coded. It is obviously a trans joke, but it was one of those things where I'm going, I think the wink wink is that he's not, the kid was identifying as a girl. Now, I could be wrong. But, or it could be a completely manufactured bit. But I sat there going like, some of the lines, I did laugh when he talked about walking away from the dad. But overall, he hammered it a little too long where I was like, okay, is this like red meat for his kind of conservative Italian fans who are like, you show up dressed like a girl to my son's class, I'm taking you out of school and I'm finding your dad and I'm putting a whooping on his ass for letting you come to kindergarten dressed like a little fairy girl. So it's like, it felt like red meat for those people. And it was a little too, it was like, it wasn't that it was too much like, oh, I see what he's doing and this is offensive. It was more like, this just isn't that funny to me right now. And I was doing the thing where, but I started to kind of go, oh, he's trying to give stuff to his conservative fans. Okay, I see. So he's letting politics play a role. Interesting. Very disappointing, Sebastian. And then he got into a thing on masks and the COVID, getting the vaccine. And he was kind of making fun of people who were like, I didn't want to be one of those people like, I'm not getting the vaccine. And then 3 weeks later, they're like, I should have gotten the vaccine. So he was, that would be, you know, what one might consider like taking a, I would say a normal, thoughtful stance, but that might be him being like, oh, he's showing that he's not partisan because now he may have had a joke about trans children, but now he's got a, or subtle quasi-trans joke, but now he's like making fun of all the people who would be like, no mask, no vaccines, fuck you. Oh, look at him being even-handed, and I found myself laughing, and then I had to pause and say, oh, this is what I get annoyed with people. I was almost doing it. Where I'm projecting my views onto his comedy and then saying, like, I don't like that he's doing this lion identifying joke. Even though I didn't think the joke was that strong, I did laugh at parts, but I found myself going like, oh, this isn't just a joke. He's doing it to appeal to the conservatives. And then when he made a joke that I liked about vaccines that I thought was a funnier bit, shorter bit, but funnier to me, I also started doing the, oh, okay, good. So he's doing both sides. Good, good. And then I had to just pause it and say to myself, oh, wow, I'm being what I fucking hate, which is projecting my views onto a comedian and then assuming everything the comedian is doing is not just a joke they found funny, but some sort of political calculation. Now, is it possible? It is, of course. But for me, without clear and convincing evidence, I think what you need to do when you go to a comedy show is just be like, if it's funny, I'm laughing. I don't need to like think of what's the motivation behind it, unless it is like some sort of Chappelle-like lecture. If somebody's doing jokes and you like them, I think that's, and that's what I find, I sort of, you know, it was the, remove the, before I call out the speck in one of my fans' eyes, I should take the log out of mine. Scripture. I modified it a little bit to be comedy relevant, but I think that's what I learned is that I often complain when you know, liberals hate my jokes because they'll laugh at the most vile Jeff Epstein joke, but then be offended at the slightest Hunter Biden joke. And I'm like, well, how does that work? Like, and in this case, I was sort of doing that and I caught myself. Because I don't know, I do know that Maniscalco was like at an event for the Republican LA mayor candidate who lost, but beyond that, I had a good interactions with him when we worked together, briefly. And I have, his comedy is fairly apolitical. And in this one, he does quote unquote go after both sides, if you can call it that. But the truth is, that really shouldn't matter unless somebody is so transparent and offensive or like serious in the case of like a Dave Chappelle trans lecture. I just said to myself, I was like, yeah, I gotta like, even I'm capable of being like a righteous douche when watching comedy, but I, you know, because I'm better than most people and very thoughtful and introspective, I caught myself quickly and then relayed that into potent, powerful and meaningful podcast content. So how about that, guys? We all learned something today. But I liked the special. It was just that moment where I was like, ew, I just did what I hate. You know, maybe that's how political our climate is now, that you start to ascribe meaning to someone's joke that maybe is there, but maybe isn't. And I think with comedy, it's like, give the benefit of the doubt to the comedian. Especially if you're a fan of the comedian, maybe they're not being a total piece of shit. Maybe they just were like, I think this is funny. There did feel like there was a bit of a wink wink because he went on so long with the identifying as a lion bit, like a very heavy handed wink wink. But then again, I hate to say this. I don't hate to say this. Here's the truth. Maybe there is humor in a story of a four-year-old going to pre-K dressed as a gender that they were not born as. Not in a cruel way, but, you know, sometimes I think we look at things and say, oh, if that person is part of a marginalized group, then that entire topic must be off limits. You know, and I thought I definitely liked the Maniscalco special, but that I just thought I could offer that to you as it can even happen to your comedy hero, that I have to sort of check my own politics and be like, just laugh. You know, if I find out this guy is like, you know, if I find out Maniscalco is part of the Westboro Baptist Church and joining some conservative group to like ban certain things, then it can hit differently. But I don't know that. And, you know, there's never been really anything to suggest he's like some sort of like, you know, I use another example of a talented comedian, but who is so much worse in terms of like a Nick DiPaolo, who's, you know, like he's somebody I have seen in the past, but that's somebody I wouldn't go see again. Even though when I was doing my Trump impression at Sirius XM, when he had a show there, he just came out of his office with a smile on his face. And I was like, that's how I know I'm good. And it only took a pandemic after that for me to get recognized. How about that, folks? Anyway, last thing I want to talk about, guys, I finished The Offer. I couldn't go back to Andor. Because I was so into The Offer on Paramount Plus. This was the show I offered an apology last week where I said, yeah, I really ripped this one a new one. Like 5 minutes in, I was like, I can't do this. They made a cannoli joke in the first 5 minutes of this show. Get out of town. I can't watch this. Well, I gave it another shot and, I loved it. I really did. Like I'm shocked at what a turnaround I did. And I apologize to the three people who are like, I really liked it. And I was like, well, you're fucking stupid then. No, that was my bad. It was, I mean, if you are a fan of The Godfather, which if you are living and breathing and have ever seen a movie, you should be a fan of The Godfather. If you are not a fan of The Godfather, this I won't forgive. If you're a fan of The Godfather, I don't know how you would not love this show. Like, I was giddy, and I know that's like a little bit of what I hate, that like nostalgia. Like, I remember that. It's making me happy because I remember that. I don't even know if this is good anymore, but I'm so happy because I know this. But I really liked the story. I liked the performances, like many good performances in the show. It was pretty awesome. The only note I would have said is maybe if they had ended it after episode 9, because it's almost like we all know what happens. Like almost in that, like I read this book that I recommended called Becoming Richard Pryor. It's one of my favorite biographies of any comedian, because it's about Richard Pryor up until 1980. And part of the implication there is like, well, then he becomes a comedy icon and superstar and the Richard Pryor that is like etched into everybody's mind. So I don't need to like go into that. I'm going to take you to the point. I'm going to take you through everything you may or may not know to how he got to being quote unquote Richard Pryor. I thought that book was great. It's called Becoming Richard Pryor. I can't read it from here. It's on my far bookshelf, but it's, I want to say the guy's first name was Saul, but Becoming Richard Pryor is the name of the book. And I feel like this show, they could have ended after episode 9, where it was like, well, we got the movie made and it's premiering. The rest is history. It becomes the, you know, at the time, the biggest box office hit and an Oscar winner. And 50 years later is, you know, it's either Godfather, Godfather 2, or Citizen Kane, depending on what film school and film critic you ask for what the greatest movie of all time is. I will say this about Citizen Kane. It was my father's favorite movie. He was a huge Orson Welles fan. He loved Orson Welles and Bette Davis. That's it. Like, you knew my dad liked something when he said it like a Haitian Wilson Pickett. But yeah, he was a huge Orson Welles fan. He just, what a genius. And I think it helps. My father was 10 when Citizen Kane came out. And Orson Welles was only 24 when he made, you know, when Orson Welles made Citizen Kane, he wrote and directed it and or co-wrote it. If you watch Mank, which was boring as fuck. David Fincher, everybody's entitled to it. I get it. Your dad wrote the movie. Congratulations. You honored your father with one of the most boring movies you've ever made, if not the most boring movie you've ever made. But I get it. Family first. Don't ever do it again, David Fincher, or you might lose your perch as JL's current number one filmmaker in the world. Anyway, guys, current, not like Spielberg isn't the guy, the GOAT, but I'm just saying right now on the leaderboard. Christopher Nolan had that title, but boy, oh boy, if Interstellar didn't confuse me, and Dunkirk somewhat bore me, although I do want to watch Dunkirk again. I will give him that. That's one I feel like I will like more on a rewatch. Boy, oh boy, Tenet, get out of here. Get out. You are in probation right now, Christopher Nolan. You better hope Oppenheimer is the shit, which I think it probably will be. But what I go on these tangents, guys, and I think my brain is just fried, but oh, Citizen Kane. Yeah. I just wanted to give some shout-outs. I finally watched it a couple of years ago. And much like It's a Wonderful Life, which I only watched for the first time last year, those are two old movies that, like, there's some old movies that surprised me at how well they held up. Like, Citizen Kane, to me, I found the story interesting. Like, I know people are always like, oh, it's a technical masterpiece because he invented various techniques that became common in film. But I think it's also a narrative masterpiece. So I think it's both, which is when you have a great movie, when you've innovated visually, but you've also created a story. I mean, I find the ending, I know Rosebud is a hack thing at this point, but I found the ending, sorry, spoiler for Citizen Kane, but I found the ending, the idea that, like, his story will never be known. Like, they're burning his stuff. So, like, we learn at the end, Rosebud was his sled, you know, and sort of a link to childhood and whatnot. But, like, they burn it. Like, they're like, I guess some things are never found out. And I was like, you fuckers, you could. No. But I thought Citizen Kane was outstanding. And there's just certain things I don't think we can appreciate about why it has that hallowed status, because it not only was a good story, but also it was a innovative film, but you know, you can't watch a 1941 movie and be like, oh yeah, I can see how it was so innovative. It's like, no, you can't. yeah, my dad liked Orson Welles and Betty Davis. What else? The Offer. It's great. They could have just left it off after episode 9, is my point. We all know what happens, and I thought that would have been more of a becoming Richard Pryor-esque choice to be like, yeah. Do you not know what happens after the movie premieres, that it becomes the biggest hit in the world and critically acclaimed and wins a bunch of Oscars and goes on to be one of the top 2 to 3 films of all time, depending on where you want to rank it? Nobody's got it lower than 3. I know that, and many people have it at number 1. I think it's the greatest. It's not only the greatest, it's also one of my favorite. That's the thing. It's the greatest movie for me, and it's also one of my favorites. It's not like, well, you gotta say the Beatles are the best band of all time. Like, I guess you have to, and I get why we say that. It's totally understandable. They're not my favorite band. Like, for me, it's Guns N' Roses is my favorite band, but people would look at me like I was stupid if I was like, the best band of all time is Guns N' Roses. They'd be like, yeah, well, I like Guns N' Roses too. That's just a false statement. Whereas The Godfather, you can actually say, it's my favorite movie or one of my 5 favorite movies, and it's also the best movie ever. And people would be like, yep, me too. So if you like The Godfather, The Offer, I highly recommend it on Paramount Plus. I made a mistake. I wanted to watch it, and then there's a cannoli line in like the opening scene where I was like, they're really doing that? How dare they? But really good stuff. Matthew Good as Bob Evans, like the head of Paramount. Incredible. Juno Temple from Ted Lasso, really good. Miles Teller, really good. Giovanni Ribisi, a little strange, but you know, good role. Who else? There was one other person. Oh, yeah. I forget his name, but he's in like a lot of comedies. He played Francis Ford Coppola. That he was well cast. it was just really good. I was so happy watching it. Once I got through like my initial disgust at like the wink winks, I loved it. And I might, you know, here's my thing. I might not be objective because I am such a fan of The Godfather. I'm like, oh my God, I remember that. Like maybe they were Dane cooking me or they were like, remember when they did this? Everybody does this. And I'm like, that's right. The Offer. That's right. They did do that. And maybe I'm being a fanboy dummy, but to me, it's like, if you like The Godfather, I don't know how you're not going to like watching this series. So The Offer on Paramount Plus, recommend it. And the last thing I'll tell you before I let you get on with your lives this week is I rewatched Avatar. The nephew hadn't seen it, so we watched Avatar in preparation for seeing Avatar 2 on Sunday. And for anybody who's a Making Podcasts Great Again Patreon person, there will be a movie review show. I'll be reviewing Avatar 2 and Emancipation Sunday night, the night Hanukkah begins. So you should have that hopefully by the 19th if my partner in crime on that podcast deigns to upload them. But Avatar 1 is incredibly beautiful, and I feel like everybody always feels this need, like it's like street cred. Like if I say, oh, Avatar was awesome, visually it was awesome, the script was shit, like that's become like almost a hacky thing to say to show that like, oh, I get it, oh, you didn't like fully like Avatar, oh, you're cool, you're like, you're legit, you're no, I just rewatched it and I was like, yeah. Are there a couple of lines that are like action adventure movie cheesy? Of course. And yes, could they have named the substance, the rare substance, something other than unobtainium? Yes, they should have done that. They should have just given it a prescription name, like, you know, Skyrizi. That, you know, that would have been better than unobtainium. But outside of those things, I think it's the first time I've watched it on my 4K TV. Like I have the Blu-ray, but the 4K kind of upgrades like the Blu-ray quality, not to full 4K, but it basically looked like fucking 4K on my TV. It's so visually amazing. But then I was just like, yeah, I didn't like roll my eyes. And this was on not my first viewing. I really didn't have a problem with the script. I feel like that's become like just such a cliche. Like when somebody names Avatar, it's like a dude coming up to me after a show going, you were pretty funny. Like after you've killed. And it's like, do you think you're gay? Hey, tough guy, do you think you're a gay man? If you say that I was hilarious, you were pretty funny, man. Pretty funny. Okay. I don't suck dick. Bye. Have a good night. That's the vibe you sometimes get from dudes who'll be like, pretty funny, man. Pretty funny. Like, oh, okay, good. I thought we were going to have to date and get gay married if you said I was hilarious or that you had a fun time. But okay, good. Whew. Oh, God. That's how I feel with people who are like, oh, visually it's so impressive, but the script is so bad. I'm like, no, it's not. It's not. You're just saying that because it's a big, colorful adventure movie. And like you, if you just go, I love Avatar, it's like, oh, I didn't know you got down like that. Okay, Avatar guy. Yeah, Avatar is awesome. It's incredible. And I came up with a new joke, which is that jacked old dude, Stephen Lang, who is in Don't Breathe, which is another Don't Breathe is one of those very underrated, like, didn't go quite under, it's not underrated because it got really good reviews, but it's like, it doesn't get mentioned enough to me as far as like a modern thriller horror movie that fucking was awesome. Don't Breathe, excellent movie. I forget what it's on because we just watched it. I think it might be on Peacock. I think we watched it like before Halloween or on Halloween night. That's the like scary-ish movie we watched because Righteous Girlfriend hadn't seen it. And I think it was on Peacock, but it's Don't Breathe is awesome. And this guy, Stephen Lang, I wasn't sure. He was on The Good Fight. Hello, Michael C. Yeah, The Good Fight on Paramount Plus. He shows up in season 5, which is, you know, I think he may have been in an earlier season. No, he was in several episodes over the course of several seasons, but he really has a bigger role in season 5, which for me is when the show really started to go south. Although I had a, she's so tiny, but I had a quirky thing for what is her name? Marissa, the little short Jewish secretary. or assistant who becomes, I like her on The Good Fight. And she has a bigger role in season 5. But Stephen Lang is in that. But I was like, is that him? Because he's wearing like a suit and he's a little older and he's wearing glasses. But I was like, I think that's the guy from Avatar, but he doesn't look all fucking jacked. Obviously he's wearing a suit, but the old dude in Avatar, and he's jacked in Don't Breathe still. And in Don't Breathe, he's like 60, what is he? He's like 65 or 60, 67. And he's still jacked, and not jacked in like a, I take roids all day, but just I'm blessed by the Lord kind of jacked. Like my dad was that kind of jacked. My dad, all he did was walk for exercise, but he always had the good arm vein. He was always just kind of like, if my dad had wanted, he was already strong enough to beat my ass for most of my life. But, and then I have a joke on Too Big to Fail where it was like, but when I finally got fucking jacked and big, he was too old. And then I would have just looked like an Italian dude beating up a black guy in the street. Oh God, that's such a good joke. Oh, Cookie likes it. Too Big to Fail, guys. I tell you to go stream it, but all my albums are off all platforms and I have no answer. Whoops, almost forgot that I hate my comedy career. I was so in the Offer and Maniscalco. See, I was in fan mode. I was forgetting the troubles of my comedy career and going, hey, life is pretty good. You know, sometimes you can just enjoy other people's art and you can enjoy Avatar with your nephew and you can watch a Maniscalco special and you can soak up The Offer and just go, wow, there is some good stuff out there that's not hacky bullshit on TikTok. And hey, life isn't so bad. Oh, wait, I fucking forgot my albums are all off of streaming platforms. Fuck. So, yes, I would tell you to go listen to Too Big to Fail, but I may promote my USB cards. I know that seems like maybe shameless, but like if people want my albums, they can Venmo me and then I can mail them in the continental US. You get all 6 of my albums for, I guess I got to make it 40 after looking at the shipping cost, $45. It'd be $45. So I get 40 and the 5 is for the envelope and the mailing cost, but I may promote that this week as a late Christmas present for a fan. But Too Big to Fail. Yeah, I talk about that. I was like, my dad was smart. He was 47 when I was born. He turned 48, 1979. Yeah, he turned 48 a few months after I was born. And I guess I always say on the joke that he was 48 because it sounds better than 47 because it's older. But I guess technically he was like 47 and 2/3. We rounded up to 48 for the humor. But, and I said, that's brilliant because he could whip my ass and belt me when I misbehaved. But then when I was like fucking 20 from college, just throwing up 3 big wheels on the bench and squatting deep squats, 4 big wheels, all of a sudden he's like fucking Splinter in Ninja Turtles. And if I talk shit to me, if I go, what are you going to do about it, old man? People are like, that Sicilian is doing a hate crime on that poor Haitian elderly man. So, why did I bring up my dad? I don't know what I'm doing here, folks. I do not know what I'm doing. I am so tired and Too Big to Fail. I brought up that bit. If you want my albums, that was funny, but I don't know why I brought that up. I'm losing my mind. Anyway, guys, it's been a great episode. But please, hope to see you at some of those shows. Get your tickets as soon as they're available. I sign up for the newsletter if you're so inclined. I will make my, if you are somebody who wants to listen to my albums or buy my albums, I will promote this week those USB cards on Twitter and Facebook. You just have to Venmo me and I'll send you the fucking, my life's work, which still at this point is the totality of my life's work because Half Blackface is still not up. And I think I'm going to have to get a lawyer probably this, you know, if I don't hear back from a company, I'm going to have to probably get a lawyer to just find out how do I get my albums back on the air? Why are my licenses expired? Like, why are my licenses for my work not good when they were good for the last 15 years? That feels weird, oddly timed, and as always, just giving me something to be bitter about. So thank you for listening, guys. You got a couple of recommendations. You got low levels of bitterness and hostility from me. You still got some, okay, but more like a side dish or a garnish rather than the main entree. So I think that's improvement. That's called growth, guys. We call that growth. It's called growth. And oh yeah, Emancipation is the one. Oh, that's what I was going to say when I review movies for Making Podcasts Great Again Patreon. It'll be Avatar 2 and Emancipation, which, I don't know. I watched the preview for Emancipation. I don't know who in the fuck last year was like, Will Smith slapping Chris Rock really may have hurt the chances of Emancipation getting Oscar nominations. I look at that thing. That thing looks like a cheesy action movie mess about slavery. I'll judge for myself when I watch it. But when Will Smith was like, they can break my bones. And I'm like, don't do this cheat. And he's like, they can't break me. And I just got the feeling he was giving off tell the truth vibes from the oft mocked line from Concussion. I think that was called Concussion. Was it called Concussion? I don't remember. The fucking movie about concussions in football. But I was laughing when he said, they won't break me. And I laughed, and the director who made the trailer or whoever made the trailer knew what the fuck they were doing, because then they cut right to that Will Smith shot where it's modeled after that famous photo of the slave who had been, whose back was so fucking scarred up from whippings. And they basically had Will Smith taking that photo. He's that guy. He's him. I then had to stop laughing right away. I was like, oh, you knew, you manipulative piece of shit trailer maker. You knew that you were raising the cheese level to a laughable amount. And then you come in with the horrific slavery image. And I was like, now I feel bad about laughing at Will Smith saying cliches about they break my bones, but tell the truth. Okay. Guys, that's it for me. Cookie's barking. That means show over. It's 9 o'clock. Let's go read some papers, soak up the news, and God help us all with this fucking JL comedy career, because all my albums are gone. My new special isn't out. I don't know what's happening. We need a miracle, folks. So we don't need a miracle. What am I? Do we? Comedy careers don't require. The miracle is that I'm ignoring the miracle, which is God telling me to quit comedy. He is basically telling me every which way to quit comedy. He's like, JL, I'm giving you headaches, insomnia. I've destroyed your 6 albums from the internet, and your special that should have taken 2.5 months to edit and produce and pitch is going on month 16. How much more info do you need that you should not be doing this fucking monstrosity of a career? Anyway, guys, when God talks to you, listen. That's the lesson from this podcast. Unless you have a massive ego about your comedy career, at which point you tell God, shh, please, thank you. Okay, guys, bye. See you next Tuesday.